I don't know if you've noticed, but Jesus doesn't always answer questions directly. Have you noticed that in prayer sometimes? He does this in the gospel here today. Sir, we'd like to see Jesus. And Jesus answers with a long answer that at first glance doesn't sound like it has any connection with the question. But it does. But he requires us to look and to ponder and to pull out what it is that he's saying. And life is like that. We don't get immediate answers while we live on earth. Usually, it requires thinking and pondering and life experience. And this is the way God set the world up, so that we will learn. And so it's caught up in the idea that if you want to see me, you must be where I am. If you serve me, you have to follow me. I'm going to keep moving, and you've got to follow me. Where I am, my servant will be. So if you want to see me, be where I am. To be where I am, follow me. I'm going to be moving. You've got to keep coming. I'm going to lead you somewhere, and you're going to see me there. So this is the answer. And so we have to see what this movement is and what it produces. He gives us this paradox. If you love your life, you're going to lose it. If you hate your life in this world, you will preserve it. Very interesting. If a person goes into a Protestant church, usually one of the things that strikes you right away is that there usually is not a crucifix. A Catholic church has a crucifix. Now, crucifix is a very biblical image. We use it because there's always one in the sanctuary somewhere, because the Mass is a meal and a sacrifice, and the sacrifice is Christ's own sacrifice of the cross. It's not a new sacrifice. It's his, brought forward in time. So the crucifix reminds us of that. But a Protestant would say the early church did not have a crucifix in their church. And they would be correct. They had the Mass. They did not have a crucifix. What they did have was the real thing. They could see a crucifixion. It wasn't outlawed for 300 years after Christ died. Like Constantine the Great finally outlawed it out of deference for Jesus. And until that time, people could actually see them occurring. It was too gruesome to be reminded of this in church. They didn't need the reminder. But as people lost that sense of what crucifixion meant, it became necessary, really, to see it, to understand the love of God, the love that Jesus gave us. This is the essence of dying to oneself. And so, when we look at this at today's scripture, Christ invites us then. He says, I'm not going to give you my cross, this cross. I'm going to give you your cross. I'm not asking you to carry my cross. Please God, none of us will end up on a physical wooden cross, but we all have crosses to bear, and you can't escape them. We can escape some of them, but eventually they will catch up to us. Life is like that. There are some things you can't buy your way out of or run away from. They just come. Crosses take many forms, but our Lord tells us that if you're going to be with me, you must be where I am. And so this will involve self-sacrifice. Unless the grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single grain. If it dies, it yields a rich harvest. So it's that opening up. Sometimes we can escape our cross. I drove to Portland on Friday for a meeting at the Chancery office. And I know it's spring break, so I left at 1 o'clock. And right around the construction at OHSU, the traffic stopped to about 5 miles an hour. I thought, well, it's a construction delay. And I crept along for an hour until I got to the Banfield Freeway. Finally got off at 33rd Street. Wanted to cancel the meeting, but unfortunately they delayed the meeting. I wanted to get out of it, but, you know, there's nowhere to go on those curves there. So you just kind of sit there saying the rosary. I was saying, Hail Mary, full of grace, you know. purest flower of Adam's race. And it's like, if I could have gotten out of that, I would have. And that's not a sin, you know. But sometimes you're just stuck, you know. Another good place to get stuck is in
that between Brooks and Woodburn, that he, once you have a dad, to have a traffic back up there, you are stuck. There's nowhere to go unless you make an illegal U-turn. But anyway, no, I've never done that, but I've seen it happen. I've been tempted to do it. So one way to get a handle on this is that the Lord will periodically lead us. Where does he lead us so we can see him? He leads us to the places where he's in disguise. He will lead us to a place of self-sacrifice to see if we are willing to die to ourselves. And sometimes it's as simple as just having patience on the freeway. These are small things, some headache that we have. You know, but occasionally something really large will come along, and we can sidestep it if we want to. But that's not in our best interest. But we have to have the spiritual maturity to see it. I was in San Diego. I lived there for a number of years. And then I moved to Los Angeles again. And I was interviewing for this job with my company at the airport in San Diego. It would have been a very nice job. And my mother called. I lived about 200 miles from her at that time. And she said, I can't drive myself to the doctor. I'm too dizzy. They think I have an inner ear infection. Would you take me to the doctor? I just happened to be down there. I said, yeah, that's fine. I worked this in with this interview. Took her to the doctor. She looked fine. She looked as healthy as a horse. And may not be the best way to put it. But she came out at the end of this visit as white as a sheet. The doctor was standing next to her, and he said, your mother has a brain tumor the size of a fist. A fist. And she has less than 3 months to live. It wasn't an ear infection. So I called my company, and they gave me a leave of absence. I didn't know what to do. She didn't want to move right away or anything, and I wasn't in a place where she could move to where I was. So this went on, and they gave her drugs, and the whole thing went in recession. You know, it was temporary, but we went through the whole nine yards. She went through denial and didn't like the fact that I was there because it reminded her of what was going on, but she couldn't be alone, and so on. And so this went on for a while, and I wondered what I was doing there sometimes, but I felt that that was what God wanted me to do. Then she went through a period of being quite ill, and then finally, it ended up being comatose, and this lasted for a couple of months where she couldn't talk. And so in the midst of that, I, being in my 20s, you know, I didn't have a very well-developed theology of suffering. Some of you know what I mean. I'm much holier now. I don't know why you're laughing. I don't think I'd handle any better now than I did then, but you know, you go back and forth between wanting to make a self-sacrifice and wanting to get out of there. And so I was going back and forth and in my mind, but never moving from where I belonged. You know, and I had this dream, and I'm going to share it with you because it's been so helpful over the years to me. Really, I think the genesis of my wanting to be a diocesan priest instead of a monk came from this experience here. Not the dream, but the experience of my mother. And she was laying in this hospital bed in this dream, which was true. And the dream was exactly the way the room was set up. Sometimes they're a little weird, these dreams. And there were a couple other people in the room. And I was looking at her, and suddenly, instead of her, it was Christ on his cross in the bed. And this has an obvious meaning. I don't have to interpret it. But I woke up, and I was kind of ticked off at God. I woke up and I said, I knew that was from God. And I said, she's not on the cross. She's got morphine. She's unconscious. I'm the one that's suffering. I said, I'm the one on the cross, not her. I said, well, I kind of was mad about it. I said, she's, you know, I'm the one that's doing all the suffering, and she's getting all the glory here. And or something along those lines, something unholy like that. And it was as if the Lord said to me, you don't understand is that this is me. You know, you're taking care of me right now. This, your cross, you are where I am, you see? You have come to where I am. I am here. This is me. It's a self-sacrifice for me, see? And, of course, that changed my whole outlook on the thing. And it's continued to change things over the years. I often share that with people that are ill when I visit them, something along those lines. We take the role of Christ sometimes when we're in bed so others can serve, or we're visiting Christ, and it is really Him. But what it really was, and it's useful in many other situations, because Christ is in disguise in these things precisely so that I will die to myself to make someone else happy, to give to what them, the listening. When somebody call, a friend calls, and you're going to talk for a long time maybe or something, and you know, you decide, I'm going to listen. I'm going to put that TV program aside and listen to this person. I'm not going to do five things at once, or my child is ill, and I, you know, and I, there are various ways of handling that sort of thing. Of course, you get stuck in traffic. Is Christ there? Yes, He was, waiting for to stop the self-centeredness of, I have to get somewhere. Well, so does everybody else. It looks like we all stopped at the same time, didn't we? Becomes a spiritual moment. Or we can try to get out of these crosses. And you know, I'm a cross avoider by nature, and most of us are, you know, and there's ways to do it. The Imitation of Christ, I need to reread this. It says, everywhere we meet the cross. He was writing to monks in the 15th century. The thing is so filled with wisdom. He said, you know, talking to monks, he said, some of you monks feel that by changing places, you are going to get out of what misery you're in this particular monastery. He said, you know, a change of place has deceived many people. Because go where you will, when you arrive there, you're going to find the cross all the same, perhaps a heavier one than the one you were running away from. So, and that's because life is set up like that deliberately. Can I die to myself? Can the grain of wheat open up and become a plant? Behind me in the field, we have, this year, grass was planted. Those seeds, as they start to come up, in order for them to grow, of course, they have to break open. This, if a seed could have feelings, it might be painful. But this is something that, if we die to ourselves, suddenly this plant appears that was never there before. We see things in a new way. We become something we weren't, which is a little less selfish, you know. Otherwise, we can anesthetize ourselves. We can change our jobs. We can change our spouse. We can change our where we're living. We can change churches, all to avoid a cross. And it's going to find us all the same. I'm with you. If I can get out of one, I'm going to. But sometimes we can't. And it isn't God's will that we do. He's waiting for that self-sacrifice. And the minute we do, there's Jesus. Philip asks the question, Lord, they want to see Jesus. And He says, well, if you want to see Me, go where I am, and you'll find Me. It sounds cliche, but the poor and the marginalized, the sick and the suffering, those in need, the people at the food bank, the people here in this church, the person at the grocery store, my family who irritates me, the sick person in bed, my relative that's dying, that's extreme. But many of you have experienced that. This is where you'll find Me. And when you make a sacrifice for that person, you will discover, in fact, that it was Me.